I'm going to be speaking about an organisation, a British organisation called Hope Not Hate. Oh, you've all heard of it. I was going to say, because it seems a bit rude to be speaking about a British organisation outside of Britain. However, they do affect people in other countries as well. And they interfere with things in quite all over Europe, really, certainly all over Western Europe. They tried to interfere with something in Estonia, and it didn't work. But anyway. So they've also recently established a branch in America. So they are, you could say, an international threat to our movement. All right, so we'll begin. Hope Not Hate was founded in 2004 by Nick Lowles, who was a former associate producer on the BBC's Panorama programme. I think some of you will have heard of that recently. He has been involved with Panorama since at least 2000, and is, I think that's the basis for why Hope Not Hate today is trusted implicitly by the BBC, as we saw with Tommy Robinson's Panorama debacle. But there is a relationship between Hope Not Hate and the BBC, which I think goes back to his involvement with the BBC a long time ago. Hope Not Hate began in 2004 as an offshoot of the Jewish activist organisation Searchlight, and it was dedicated to campaigning against and researching extremism. Initially, Hope Not Hate set itself against the British National Party, the BNP, and one of their activists, Dan Hodges, wrote that during this period, it was no-holds-barred, bare-knuckle PR. We used every dirty, underhand, low-down, unscrupulous trick in the book in order to defeat the BNP. They worked by discrediting and undermining and so on. So the BNP, partly as a result of Hope Not Hate's efforts, died a death in 2010. And after that, Hope Not Hate focused on the counter-jihad movement, especially the English Defence League, which had been founded the year before. The EDL were very careful about banning neo-Nazis, BNP members, and anyone who was anti-Semitic or racist, as opposed to merely anti-jihad, counter-jihad. But that wasn't enough for Nick Lowles, who wrote the following. While many in the Jewish community have understandable concerns about the rise of Islamic fundamentalism, the EDL are not our friends. So the EDL was a major target because they were the working class English voice against the encroachment of Islam into Britain, into England. After the EDL tailed off, Hope Not Hate then turned its attention to UKIP, which by now was agitating for an EU referendum, which became the Brexit referendum. And then, after that, this is just about the history of who they've gone after. After that, something new emerged. And that was a collection of writers and content creators, collectively known loosely as the Dark Enlightenment, especially a faction of it called the Reactosphere. Now, this was a sort of intellectual thing, and because it was so original and unprecedented, Hope Not Hate didn't know what to make of it at first. They were sort of optimized for street thugs, marches, rallies, Combat 18, that kind of thing from the 90s. They didn't know how to handle something that was intellectual, cerebral. And so they ignored the Reactosphere for a long time until they discovered my channel on YouTube. But we'll get to that later. The Reactosphere soon spawned the much more populist alt-right movement. Hope Not Hate got very scared by the alt-right. The alt-right posed perhaps the first serious cultural threat to the progressive globalist paradigm since World War II, but then sadly devolved into public rallies, and it became white nationalism 1.0 again, so not much use. But meantime, the alt-right inspired a more family-friendly movement dubbed the Alt-Light. And this movement also frightens Hope Not Hate. It lacks the intellectual rigor of the alt-right, but has an advantage of its own, namely much broader public appeal. People like Brittany Pettibone, Lawrence Southern, Milo, Cernovich, etc. And as such, because of this threat, and we would have criticisms of those people in various ways, but they nevertheless they oppose the current paradigm. And that is why Hope Not Hate go after them. They expend a great deal of energy trying to thwart and discredit the alt-right. And then there is the identitarian movement, spearheaded by Martin Sellner's organisation, Generation Identity. And Hope Not Hate are very troubled by Martin Sellner, because his strategy works. And the public, I think, broadly speaking, trust him. They see him as a likable guy. Like many in this movement, Sellner is clearly a good man. He's not a villain. But Hope Not Hate desperately try to paint him as a villain. They also try to obstruct his organization. Generation Identity's Defend Europe mission, though it had nothing to do with Britain, was heavily attacked by Hope Not Hate. I think, and this was about stopping the NGOs that they're bringing their ships full of migrants into Europe. And I think the idea of white people actively stopping outsiders from entering Europe absolutely terrified Hope Not Hate. In the way that you sometimes see public figures who seem to have a visceral hatred and fear of white people actually standing up for their countries and protecting their borders. It's something profound. Apart from that, Hope Not Hate have also kept abreast of developments in the British fascist sector with groups like National Action. Now, from what I know about National Action, they actually were a threat to public safety, or at least a threat to the safety of particular people. If Hope Not Hate limited themselves to groups like that, I could understand. I could understand what they were doing. Although I would still think it's really the job of the security services, not a highly politicised charity. But the fact is, Hope Not Hate don't limit themselves to violent groups. Most of their time, money, energy and resources are spent vilifying peaceful people. So the growth of the alt-right combined with the dissolution of the alt-right, the arrival of identitarianism, the emergence of free speech advocates, and the new breed of Sargonite centrists who oppose progressivism has led to what we call the dissident right. Hope Not Hate oppose all of these factions and the dissident right as a whole. They also continue, up to this day, to work against their old enemies, Nigel Farage, UKIP, and especially Tommy Robinson. But as I mentioned earlier, Hope Not Hate is today trusted implicitly by the BBC, also by the mainstream British press. They are always consulted on any article, news story to do with nationalism or the far right. There's always a quote from some person from Hope Not Hate. They're the people the media go to get the line on and the truth on things. But it seems increasingly that they are also trusted and consulted by the British government itself, which is very worrying. However, they're not so popular with the public. On Twitter, they have 78,000 followers, which for an organisation that's been going for 15 years and has massive funding is really not very impressive at all. On Facebook, they do better. They have 260,000 followers. But their YouTube channel, which you would think would be the natural place for them to thrive, has an astonishing 770 subscribers. And since you enjoyed that statistic, I'll give you some more statistics about their YouTube channel. 86% of the videos on their channel have comments disabled. And this is especially ironic since they recently tweeted a quotation, "Once you have dialogue starting, you know you can break down prejudice." They have a total of 720 upvotes on their channel, but 4,080 downvotes. That is a total dislike to like ratio of 6 to 1. Remarkable. On average, 13.5% of people who watch each video downvoted, which is just astonishing. And 44% of the videos on their channel have the likes and dislikes hidden. So they are not well loved by the public. And their message is not warmly received. Now, I'm going to move on to the question of to what extent Hope Not Hate is an impartial organization, because they do describe themselves as, Hope Not Hate describes itself as a non-partisan organization. Its staff claim to challenge extremism, which is very broad. However, I contend that Hope Not Hate is actually an avowedly leftist organization. Now, for a start, it receives a great portion of its funding from trade unions. It's impossible to know what portion of its funding, but it seems to be one of the main sources that they have. Its founder, Nick Lowles, was, according to several websites, and I can't confirm this, but according to several websites, he was involved with both the Communist Party and the Socialist Workers' Party. But one of their head researchers, Matt Collins, is currently a member of the Communist Party, for sure, because he said it himself. And he once had Vladimir Lenin as his Facebook avatar. That is Lenin, who was prepared to kill 90% of the Russian people for the sake of communism, though he was apparently not an extremist. Another piece of evidence that they are certainly not partisan, not impartial. George Soros and his Open Society Foundations support globalist, progressivist, left-wing causes of all kinds. I've seen Hope Not Hate balk at the suggestion that they are a Soros-funded organization. Yet they are. In 2014, they received over $93,000 from the Open Society Foundations. In 2015, they received $166,000. In 2016, they received over $198,000. So, George Soros, we know, does not fund right-wing or centrist organizations. So clearly, again, more evidence that it is left-wing in its, from top to bottom. Also, their 2018 Fear, Hope and Loss report on how to improve race relations in Britain contains a section titled The Challenge for Labour, the Labour Party. Not the challenge for politicians, the challenge for Labour. How can Labour benefit from this situation and improve this situation and gain from improving this situation? So again, biased. And finally, their 2019 State of Hate report contains 56 pages on the far right, but only 6 pages on Islamic extremism. So 90% of their report is about far right activity, even though 92% of the people arrested in Europe for terrorism are Islamists, with only 2.6% being right-wing. That's according to Europol. So, Hope Not Hate is strongly connected to the Labour Party. Some of its senior staff are communists or ex-communists. It receives much of its funding from trade unions. The vast majority of its focus is on right-wing groups, and it collaborates with left-wing Antifa. The idea that Hope Not Hate is a non-partisan organisation is simply ludicrous. Now, that's the statistics largely over with. From now on, I'm going to be speaking more about the ethics and psychology of the organisation. But first, I'll start with my own experience of Hope Not Hate. That began in July 2015. At that time, my YouTube channel was a year and a half old, and I had about 3,500 subscribers. That's a very modest channel, very modest indeed, as YouTube goes. I was, and forgive me for sounding very self-effacing, but this is the truth of it, I was a loser. A 32-year-old neet who had been clinically depressed for 10 years. And this is relevant. I'm not just insulting myself. This is relevant. And you'll see why. So I had started this channel, and I was using a pseudonym because there was just no reason to give my real name. There was no reason. And also, I knew that some of the topics I discussed were, it could be risky for me and my family if people knew who I was and where I lived. And I saw myself very much as a man in a bedroom, talking to a camera, and hoping to gain a better understanding of the world. That's all it was. It was an intellectual endeavor. I had absolutely no intentions of trying to change society or influence politics. I wasn't connected to any organizations, and I didn't see myself as a political activist. I was just a guy living at his dad's house and making very downbeat, slow-paced intellectual videos on a tiny YouTube channel. Yet, when Hope Not Hate discovered this, their first reaction was to try to obtain my name and hunt me down. Now, is that not strange? Very much a harmless channel, an intellectual project, a guy with no social power whatsoever, no influence, not connected to any organizations, very much an innocent project. And yet their first reaction was, who is he? What's his name? Where is he? How can we find him? And the reason for, it's obvious why they would want to do that is silencing, intimidation. So I would say at this point, I would say to supporters of Hope Not Hate, look at what this organization that you support actually does. It tries to intimidate, demonize, silence, make unemployed ordinary people just for voicing ideas and concerns and observations. So, as a supporter of the left, of liberalism, of openness and fairness, is the ruining of people's lives really what you signed up for? I doubt it. Anyway, as a response to Hope Not Hate trying to identify me, I put up a video inviting them to a discussion with me on my channel. I also asked why they wanted to know my name. Why did they have to know who I was in order to evaluate my ideas? Or to interact with me in debate. That was my attitude at the time. I didn't quite realize how vicious they are. I said these things, this offer of a debate and so on, because I thought I might be able to reason with them. What I was to learn was that these people are entirely uninterested in being reasoned with or in debating. They have a machine-like determination to defeat their opponents, or rather to crush their opponents. They have absolutely no self-reflection. They are not interested in examining the ethics of what they're doing. They accept implicitly that they and we are in a war against each other, and that in war, you don't reason with your enemy. You fight him. Hope Not Hate understand this cold and brutal truth. And I didn't in 2015. I do now. Now here's a bit about an elaboration on this. Reasoning between enemies is not possible during war, at least not intellectual reasoning. But there is a long prelude to war, during which reasoning is not only possible, but it's the natural thing for the two sides to do. But during that phase of reasoning and debating, it is much easier for a bad doctrine, bad set of ideas, to be shown up as bad. Thus, if you are peddling lies, falsehoods, and poison, your best option is to avoid being shown up. Your best option is to skip the reasoning phase and escalate to war as soon as possible. This way, you don't need to have a dialogue with your opponent. No, escalate to war, then you can simply demonize your opponent as somebody who cannot be reasoned with, somebody who is insane, somebody who is belligerent, somebody who is stupid, somebody who gave you no choice but to go to war with him. So escalating to war simplifies the conflict between two sides. Argumentation is replaced by battle strategy. Intellectual give and take, nuance and complexity are replaced by any tactic goes. In war, An enemy is nothing but an enemy. And you don't need to accord him any mercy, any concessions, any respect. But escalating to war unnecessarily and not even trying to reason with your opponent is extremely immoral. And yet, this is what Hope Not Hate do with every single person they target. They never attempt to have a dialogue with the person, to test out his ideas, to test out their own ideas, to learn that maybe they're wrong in their worldview. Never. Because Hope Not Hate know already that their doctrine is a false one, that they are peddling poison to the people of Britain. They know this, and that is why their default, indeed only, behaviour is belligerence. Your ideas might be crazy, but you can still be victorious. All you have to do is demonise your opponent so that people don't take him seriously, and distort his ideas so that people misunderstand them, and reduce his motivation to hate so that people don't respect him. This might be immoral and dishonest, but so what? You're not interested in the truth or in virtue, you're interested in winning. That is the modus operandi of Hope Not Hate. They are interested in winning, in crushing their opponents by any means they can. Deplatforming, obstructing, defunding, travel visas revoked, conferences shut down, conference speakers deported, discrediting people, demonizing them, and demoralizing individuals and organizations. Joe Mulhall, who is basically the second in command at Hope Not Hate, once said, "I'm very happy for people to go after combatants. The rules are not going after innocent people, families or homes." So in his mind, I, Frody, everyone, maybe everyone in this room, is a combatant in war, and he's going to fight us. He's going to ruin your lives if he can, every single one of you. So, the dissident right in Britain, but also outside it, has to awaken to this cold reality. If we try to be reasonable with Hope Not Hate, or indeed a sister organisation in another country, if we try to be reasonable with them while they try to destroy us, we will lose and they will win. They are not playing fair or acting in good faith. Yet we disavow each other in a vain attempt to get Hope Not Hate to leave us alone. And that is simply pathetic. Now, I'll move on to the vilification of individuals and how this is done, how this is carried out. When your average European encounters an idea, and I say European, I think most people here will be happy with that classification, so I don't need to defend it. When your average European encounters an idea that contradicts the current social paradigm, he enjoys nothing better than to subsequently learn that that idea, which is controversial and a bit troubling and a bit confusing, is believed in by stupid people. Because then he doesn't need to take it seriously. He can dismiss it. And his worldview remains intact. His social market value remains undamaged. His identity as a good, right-thinking person who's in tune with the times and his society and the people around him remains unthreatened. And harmony is restored to his life. Everything is still as it was before I encountered this idea, because I know it is a false idea, because I know it is believed in by stupid people. For stupid, you could substitute uneducated, unworldly, unsophisticated, gullible, angry, insecure, or indeed hateful. If you can show that an idea is held by any of those categories of person, then everyone else will dismiss it. Hope Not Hate work by associating ideas with socially undesirable types of people. The angry ex-husband, the frustrated incel, the insecure loner, the miserable failure, the devious girl, the violent yob, the ignorant fool, the vain narcissist, the bitter woman, the callous rich brat, the Nazi in a suit, and the football hooligan. Hope Not Hate never take on arguments. They go for poisoning the well by means of character assassination. Following Alinsky's advice, they make it personal, very personal. According to them, there is really nothing good about anyone in nationalism. Every one of us is simply a bad, villainous, dishonest person. Now, if you point out that Hope Not Hate are demonising you and possibly damaging your reputation, your well-being, your career, your prospects, they accuse you of, quote, manufacturing a martyr image for yourself. So when you point out that they are trying to ruin your life, they say, well, you're just trying to get pity from people. You're just trying to get sympathy. You're trying to milk this thing that's being done to you that we are choosing to do to you. But, oh, God, you're awful. And then on top of that, you feel sorry for yourself. So, yeah, there you go. Now, a few examples of how they vilify individual people. When I was doxxed a little over 2 years ago, my life was turned upside down, massively stressful and scary experience. I was on the front page of the most popular newspaper in my country as a villain, a bad guy. And Hope Not Hate were asked by a newspaper for a quote about me. And Joe Mulhall said that I should, he added to my problems by saying that I should face police investigation for hate speech. And I mean, obviously, this is to be expected, but nonetheless, I remember thinking at the time, I'm in a pretty low place here, and you're doing what you can to make it even worse. Now, there was another case, the case of Tom Dupre, and there are many cases that I could go through, but for the sake of brevity, I've limited it to four people. In the case of Tom Dupre, they tried to get him fired from his job. He was working in the city in London. He had a very good career ahead of him. They tried to get him fired for his job because he was involved with Generation Identity. Now, when his employer refused to fire him, Hope Not Hate threatened his company with reputational ruin. And so they fired Tom Dupre. A promising career was destroyed. A young man's life was wrecked. And that was really just to send a message to everyone else. You want to have a career, don't get involved in identitarianism because Hope Not Hate will destroy your career. They'll wreck your life. Another one, when Lucy Brown, a journalist, photographer, when she refused to sell out her former colleague, Tommy Robinson, Hope Not Hate, who had been trying to persuade her to sell out, they lost patience with her and tried to ruin her life as well. Another case was a humble working-class woman who ran a market stall, and she liked some Tommy Robinson pages on Facebook and did admin for a patriot group on Facebook. Hope Not Hate. And that was all she did. This straightforward, ordinary, working-class woman. Hope Not Hate decided to sabotage her business and ruin her reputation with a smear article that will probably follow her for the rest of her life. Their line of attack on her was that she was unintelligent and uneducated. She has three children, and I presume that they are being raised on welfare now. There is also the matter of sadism, which I think is interesting, psychologically interesting, because again, it shows you that this actually matters to the people involved. It's not just a professional career for them. They are actually enjoying it. Okay, in August 2018, Matt Collins, one of the head researchers, tweeted the following. Poor old Alex Davis, the founder of National Action, has been sacked from his job. Now, I'm not defending National Action here. I'm just noting that there was no need for this to be done, for this to be said by Matt Collins. Poor old Alex Davis has been sacked from his job. If he needs those underdeveloped arms beefing up, we'll buy him a ham sandwich in that little cafe he sits in all day in Swansea. Now, the significance of this is, first of all, they're making fun of him for losing his job as a result of their attacks on him. They're also drawing attention to his physical weakness at a time when he's stressed out of his mind. And also they're indicating that they are following him around in daily life, which I remember reading that and thinking, how can they get away with this? How are they not ashamed? How are they not embarrassed? And how do they have any supporters left? And indeed, one of their supporters did object to that, and yeah, then he got turned on by Hope Not Hate. They attacked him for... Anyway, yeah, let's not go into that. Another example of their sadism is their treatment of Stead Steadman. Now, Stead Steadman is, or was at least, one of the organisers of the London Forum. He is a very kindly, gentle sort of man. Hope Not Hate had an infiltrator befriend him, to take advantage of his kindness, his trusting nature, and so on. And then they made him look foolish. And they did this not just by infiltrating the organisation, but in the way that they depicted him in their coverage. So again, that was an unnecessarily sadistic and cruel and spiteful thing to do. Now, in March 2018, Nick Lowles, the founder of the organisation, gloated on Twitter, "Disastrous week for the far right. Started with Hope Not Hate getting Holocaust denial event cancelled. Thursday, Britain First leaders were imprisoned." Britain First was an organisation in Britain. Their leaders were imprisoned. "Friday, Generation Identity leader Martin Selner and US vlogger Brittany Pettibone arrested while entering London. And today, Tommy Robinson attacked." And that was a physical attack on Tommy Robinson, entirely unprovoked by him. And it also involved the beating up of a woman, a young woman, Lucy Brown, and the loss of a lot of camera equipment. And I think two other people were also beaten up. This was all by Antifa in a car park for no reason, unprovoked. And I remember seeing this tweet from Nick Lowles and thinking, "What? How arrogant must he be? How comfortable must he be, complacent, to publicly celebrate violence against a young woman?" But there it is, and the tweet is still up now, I believe. So then from that we move on to more specific, more broadly, the issue of violence. Hope Not Hate are clever enough to never be involved in violence themselves. However, there is more to it than that, because it's more subtle. Their online shop sells, because they have, of course they have merchandise, their online shop sells an anti-fascistish, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, anti-fascistish action t-shirt featuring the logo of the German Antifa movement, which used violence very liberally in its heyday in the 1920s and 30s. But as recently as 2016, anti-fascistish action was explicitly not ruling out the use of violence. And Hope Not Hate are selling this t-shirt on their website. And indeed, Antifa today, in all countries, use violence all the time. In Britain, it's amazing. In Britain alone, Antifa have attacked young men, they have attacked young women, and they have attacked old men, including on one occasion with an air gun. And Hope Not Hate approve of Antifa, cover for them, collaborate with them, and facilitate them. These people who are needlessly and mindlessly violent towards peaceful members of the public. Now, just one example of this would be the Sevenoaks incident, in which a Generation Identity meeting was due to take place. When Hope Not Hate learned of the location, they tweeted it out so that Antifa would know where to go. Joe Mulhall tweeted out the location on his own Twitter account as well. Now, I should point out that when they tweet out the location of a GI meeting, knowing that their account is followed by thousands of Antifa members, they know what is going to happen. They tweeted out the exact address of this meeting. They knew what was going to happen. They knew what they were facilitating by doing that. And indeed, that is exactly what happened. Violence. Antifa showed up at Sevenoaks, at the location, and attacked numerous people. And the weird thing is that having tweeted out the location, Joe Mulhall actually went to the location himself to observe the ensuing violence. And I never know what to make of that. Okay, now to the matter of freedom of speech, which is increasingly dear to all of our hearts, I think. Nick Lowles, in 2012, was interviewed, and I think it was, I can't remember which newspaper it was, and he said the following: "I'm not going to sign up to a Twitter debate with Nick Griffin of the BNP. That's beyond the pale. But at the same time, we need to do more to take on their ideas in the blogosphere, as it was then called, what we would now call social media, Twitter, YouTube. We need to do more to take on their ideas. There are ideas out there in swathes. Or we sit on the sidelines, condemn them, and refuse to engage. That's when we look like the pro-censorship group." That was 2012. And as I've already indicated, they are not interested in... I mean, this seems like a young, idealistic Nick Lowles, to be honest, because nowadays it's a very, very different situation. Last year, they mounted a campaign. I think I actually do have the page open. Oh, yeah. They mounted a campaign to persuade numerous booksellers, W.H. Smith, Foyles, Amazon, and Watterson's, to stop selling a large range of right-wing books. And this is crazy because they're saying that they're not pro-censorship. We don't want to look like the pro-censorship group. But they are. And then they boasted about it. Once this campaign was successful, they tweeted about it. They wrote an article saying that this is how we did it. This is how we persuaded them. And of course, it's the usual pressure. You don't want to be seen to be supporting this. Why are you selling it then? Etc. So that's effectively book burning. They did the same with the Day for Freedom event. I think that was April last year. They basically said that it shouldn't have been allowed to take place because these people, the far right, don't really believe in free speech. It was all a mirage, it's all a trick. There's a lot more that I could say about this, but I'm going to skip it because, I mean, it's basically the same. And what I should say about the books, Amazon, their line here is what the same thing that they say about getting people banned from social media, Twitter and so on. What they'll say is, we're not censoring them. We're not calling for them to be banned. We're not denying them their freedom of speech. We're just saying that they shouldn't be allowed to use their freedom of speech on this major website where everybody uses their freedom of speech, where everybody interacts, the global public square of Twitter or the global bookseller of Amazon. So not only will they no longer be part of the mainstream conversation, also they will struggle to sell their books. They'll struggle to make a living. So that will thwart them in various ways. But it's not censorship. But of course it's censorship. It's just censorship of a qualified type. But it has the same end result. Far fewer people will encounter these ideas. It will be far more difficult to find them if you are looking for them. And the people developing these ideas will find it much harder to engage in intellectual discourse with other people. So of course it's censorship. And then, you could talk about many examples where they gloat about one person or another being banned from social media. And there are just so many of them. And the point here is, it's to get they pretend, even today, they still say, well, we're not pro-censorship. We believe in freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is a precious treasure. And yet, what they do, a very large portion of their daily work is ensuring that people's freedom of speech is restricted, limited, and their voices reduced to whispers. So it's grotesque hypocrisy and just dishonesty. As I say, if I had much more time, I would just give you one example after another of this. However, let's move on. I want to talk now about love and hate. A lot of us will be familiar with the Christian maxim from 1 Corinthians 13. And now abideth faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. Sometimes it is translated as love, sometimes charity. The ancient Greek was agape, the transcendent love between God and man. Now, I am unsure, quite frankly, I have thought about it a lot, and I am unsure whether love is greater than hope or faith. But certainly it motivates us and soothes us and unites us. Love binds each man to his friends, his relatives, his people, his land, his home, his nation, and his culture, and thus directs him towards duty, honour, and courage. That is a great power indeed. But in the realm of human society, is love as profitable as its opposite force, hate? Now, first, let me clarify what I mean by hate. I mean the visceral and irrational loathing and anger towards a group of people. I don't mean what Hope Not Hate mean when they use that word. What they refer to as hate is, for most of their targets, actually just a concern for one's nation, one's ethnic group, one's people, one's culture, etc. That's what they call being hateful, being motivated by hate, being a hate monger, caring about Europe, caring about Sweden, caring about Britain. Hope Not Hate say that that is hate. I disagree entirely. Because, of course, the way they'll say this, the way they'll justify saying this, is that defending your nation and your ethnic group necessarily means protecting it from people who would alter it out of recognition, whether culturally, religiously, or genetically. But protecting your nation from foreign peoples does not mean hating those foreign peoples. But that is what Hope Not Hate pretend. In the meantime, and I want to emphasize that it is absurd, it's cartoonish to say that, well, if you don't want London to become Chinese, then you must just simply hate the Chinese. Now, that is a ridiculous thing to say. In the meantime, having set up this straw man, Hope Not Hate direct their supporters to hate it. And this is the big irony, to literally hate this straw man that they erect about each person. They present the person in the most biased and negative light possible, so that their own supporters will respond to it with hatred. So basically, Hope Not Hate is an organization that peddles hatred. Hatred for Brexiteers. Hatred for the right. Hatred for the far right. Hatred for Generation Identity. Hatred for the alt-right. Hatred for the alt-light. Hatred for Nigel Farage. Hatred for Sargon of Akkad. Hatred for free speech proponents. Hatred for the yellow vests. Hatred for some people on a hiking trip in Derbyshire. Hatred for Milo. Ionopolis, that is. Hatred for a guy teaching his pug dog a bad taste trick. Hatred for civic nationalists, which I might actually share, come to think of it. I'm just kidding. Hatred for traditionalists. Hatred for a young English woman from Cambridge asking questions about the world. Hatred for a jobless ex-student from Scotland asking questions about the world. Hatred for organisers. Hatred for activists. Hatred for writers. Hatred for content creators. Hatred unending, unthinking, and infinite. Hatred for anyone who offers an alternative to what Hope Not Hate offer. There is no end. And this is, again, I want to emphasize this because it is so ironic given their organization's name. There is no end to the hatred that they encourage among their supporters and in society at large. So why do Hope Not Hate do this? Because, to answer my question from earlier, hate is much more profitable than love. When a man loves, he thinks. He thinks about how to protect the thing he loves. When a man hates, he doesn't think. He just succumbs to the sensation of being superior and righteous over that which he despises. Love bestows responsibilities and attachments, which in turn constrain one's ego and one's freedom of action. Hate, by contrast, is the gift that keeps on giving. It licenses one to be completely irresponsible. It severs each of us from that which we should respect and serve. It invites every man to indulge his ego to engage in limitless destruction and to pour tireless scorn upon other people. If you offer a man that degree of bestial freedom, you can get a lot of money out of him. You can get a lot of charitable donations out of him, actually, as Hope Not Hate have learned. You can get many things out of him, including dependence and obedience. You can make him your slave, ultimately. Hope Not Hate is an organization that ultimately, I believe, seeks to enslave the British population by pitting them against each other in a sort of orgy of hatred. They pit the British population against each other, both across ethnic groups, by encouraging mistrust and mutual loathing, and within ethnic groups, by encouraging violence, paranoia, vilification, and doxing. That they do all of this under the cover of love is perverse but unsurprising. That they facilitate the destruction of Europe while claiming to be moderate and calling anyone who tries to preserve their homeland an extremist is just insane. That they claim to value freedom of speech whilst working every day to curtail the freedom of speech of anyone who opposes the current paradigm and to ruin those people's lives is disgusting. That they promote hate while claiming to offer hope is surely unforgivable in its shameless dishonesty. Some people believe that Hope Not Hate is a threat to British democracy. I think it's much worse than that. I consider it a threat to the native people of Great Britain themselves, and also to those other ethnic groups who now live in Britain, because it seeks, Hope Not Hate, seeks to interfere with and control relations between them and the native people. It ensures that the native people cannot get what they want, which is what they used to have, a homeland of their own, where they could rest assured that their grandchildren would look, think and feel like they do. Hope Not Hate also ensures that those native people cannot have an honest dialogue with the immigrant populations, because it inserts itself between them and demonises anyone who says what everyone's thinking. This imperative to shut up and pretend that everything is okay, an imperative which is also promoted in America by the ADL and the SPLC, is how ethnic tensions have worsened over the decades and Britain has become what it is today. A seething cauldron of mutual suspicion, latent racism, often overt racism, and absolutely no practical solutions other than for the white people to simply surrender everything. Things would be simpler and a lot more constructive, but for the activities of Hope Not Hate. I believe it is a fundamentally un-British organisation in its authoritarianism, in its dishonesty, in its disregard for fair play, in its contempt for freedom of speech, in its complete lack of honour, in its moral and intellectual cowardice, in its loathing of the working class, and in its mistrust of outliers and eccentrics. To the extent that you can characterise British identity as a set of values, there isn't a single one of these values that Hope Not Hate embodies. It violates them all. So it's worth considering, what kind of nation do Hope Not Hate want? Well, for a start, obviously, they don't want nations at all. They are globalists. But assuming they had to be content with Britain remaining a nation, what kind of nation would they want it to be? It would be a nation in which anybody who had a non-conformant belief or desire was identified, tracked down, demonised, shamed, silenced, and ruined. It would be a nation whose government expended enormous resources in doing on a massive scale what Hope Not Hate do today on a small scale. Spying on, sabotaging, isolating and vilifying people who dissent from the orthodoxy. It would be a nation in which dissidents would be paraded in public as figures to despise, figures who have been defeated and must now be humiliated in the public interest. It would be a nation in which people who conformed would be directed towards their basest drives, to despise those who did not conform. There would be no dignity for the conformist or for the nonconformist. It would be a nation of straight pre-programmed lines and learned, habitual, automatic dishonesty. It would be a nation in which there was no room for dissent, no room for innovation, no room for feeling, no room for romance or poetry or innocence. And if that sounds like I'm getting carried away, just look at their website, read their articles, and ask yourself, how innocent, deep down, are the people who come up with these paragraphs of dishonesty and hatred? It would be a nation of fear and paranoia and intimidation, in which nobody could trust his neighbours not to sell him out, and nobody could afford the risk of loving anybody. In short, it would be a nation of hate. So in closing, I would ask the supporters of Hope Not Hate the following questions. 1. Is this really the organisation you thought it was? 2. Are its tactics, attitudes and goals genuinely appealing to you? 3. Does its treatment of many different types of people, not just nationalists, not just racists, not just fascists or neo-Nazis, but a whole swathe, an increasing swathe of people, does its treatment of these many different types of people strike you as justified? And 4. Does its vision for a future Britain really chime with your own? Because bear in mind that if you ever drift away from their vision for Britain, and if you voice that disagreement, Hope Not Hate will try to ruin your life as well. This organisation is dangerous, malicious, vindictive and destructive to the British people, to Britain as a nation, and indeed to Europe more widely. It must be combated, shown up for what it is, and defeated. Thank you.